The majority religion in Pakistan is Islam. That faith was born in the 7th century, but now it's come into the internet age. That's helped the religion to grow and given millions of Muslims unfettered access to primary texts and new perspectives. Simultaneously, modernity and the internet have broadened a healthy debate within the Islamic community. In the third and final part of our series on Islam on the internet, NPR religion correspondent Duncan Moon reports that the web also creates confusion and stirs a volatile mix of competing opinions, including divisions over who speaks for Islam.
In Islam, the issue of authority is key. There is no institutional hierarchy or ordination, no bishops or priests. Each individual Muslim has a direct relationship with God. Even converting to Islam is a simple process. You don't need a mosque, you don't need an imam or spiritual leader, and there is no baptism. All you need are two Muslims to witness the Shahada, in which the prospective convert repeats a simple phrase. In this information age, it can even be done over the internet or on the phone. This recent conversion took place in the offices of IslamicCity.com when a woman named Trivenda called from Tennessee wanting to convert.
Here we're all gathered around the phone as if we were right there in front of you also to be part of this occasion.
Okay,
Trivenda, the meaning of it as I explained to you, there is no God but God, and Muhammad is the messenger of God. And you say it in Arabic, you can repeat after me. Ashhadu.
Ashhadu.
Allah.
Ilah.
Ilaha.
Ilaha.
Illa.
Illa.
Allah.
Allah.
Wa ashhadu.
Wa ashhadu.
Anna.
Anna.
Muhammadan.
Muhammadan.
Rasul.
Rasul.
Allah.
Allah.
Now you are a Muslim and
okay.
And you are one of us.
Okay.
Takbir.
Allahu Akbar.
Takbir.
Allahu Akbar.
Takbir.
Allahu Akbar.
For many, Islam's egalitarian simplicity is a strength, one of the reasons why it's the world's fastest growing religion. But the lack of a clear hierarchy has always caused some friction over who speaks authoritatively for Islam and how leadership is earned and validated. Now in the era of instant and ubiquitous communication, the internet has aggravated the issue. The web is replete with sermons, lectures, and so-called cyber muftis, Muslims who issue fatwas, Islamic legal opinions, and that has created an explosion of viewpoints. Muslims no longer have to rely exclusively on their local imam. Now they can shop the web to find the most charismatic and cogent speakers, people like Sheikh Hamza Yousef, whose sermons are among the most popular on many Islamic websites. Here in a sermon found on Jannah.com, he discusses the relationship between God and technology.
The word technology is from a Greek word, and the word techne is the opposite in the Greek language of physis. And physis is everything in nature. And techne is everything that man adds to nature. Now there's an interesting verse in the Quran. أَتَعْبُدُونَ مَا تَنْحِتُونَ وَاللَّهُ خَلَقُكُمْ وَمَا تَعْمَلُونَ Do you worship what you make with your hands? And Allah has created you and what you do, what you make.
The sermons run the gamut from extreme to progressive. Some speakers rally Muslims to take an active role in global politics, especially in the Middle East, while others focus inwardly on spirituality and individual consciousness. Some exhort American Muslims to activism in Western culture, democracy, and politics, while others advocate keeping a distance from what they view as an American secularism. This clip of Salim Morgan, the imam of a small Islamic community in California, was downloaded from Islam.com.
You find some Muslims running around saying, we could keep working and working until we had a Muslim president of the United States, and then who knows what would happen. Election to office in the majority of cases is not a permissible option. It's not a valid course of action because at most levels of government, in order to be an elected official, you must take allegiance to their sacred documents, and that's not permissible for a Muslim, period.
The proliferation of cyber muftis cuts two ways. It provides new perspectives and a broader, more open discussion, but it also aggravates the difficulty many Muslims have in deciding who speaks with authority. Dr. Khalid Abu El Fadl, who teaches Islamic law at UCLA, says legitimacy comes with accountability and that the internet dilutes accountability.
There are thousands of cyber muftis out there, And even more, many of the cyber muftis are not at all abashed or modest or ashamed about spewing out these fatwas left and right. And in addition, someone that you've never seen, that you don't know, that is nothing but a name, sort of gives you the law of God right there, like, you know, like a vending machine. You put in the quarter and the soda comes out.
But Dr. Muktadar Khan, the director of international studies at Adrian College in Michigan, says there is a positive side to issuing fatwas on the internet. Dr. Khan is a widely recognized cyber mufti. Visitors from more than 80 countries visit his website regularly. Khan says the internet has created a unique public forum in which all Muslim voices can be heard, both good and bad. He says it's just that kind of open debate that forces critical thinking and social progress. And he says, in a dangerous world, the web provides some measure of protection. For example, he says, he once criticized the fatwa of a conservative imam from India, and the critique found its way back to the imam.
This scholar in India who I had critiqued actually responded to me and sent an article here in Urdu, which was then locally translated into English and then published in English. And then I responded and he responded. So we had a debate going on for over a year and a half. If I was in India, one of his assistants would have come and simply beaten me up and broken my leg or something like that. That would have been the end of the debate.
Dr. Ingrid Mattson of the Duncan Black MacDonald Center for the Study of Islam and Christian-Muslim Relations says the profusion of voices on the internet broadens the options available to Muslims, but also provides stiff competition for local imams. And that, she says, can be a problem. Traditionally, in Muslim countries, the local mosque is the pinnacle of activity and education. Dr. Mattson says any potential weakening of the local community needs to be resisted, that without human interaction and challenging relationships, the real strength of Islam is diminished.
We have to be forced into community with people who aren't just like us. Real people can be more irritating than virtual people. They can have all sorts of idiosyncrasies, and we need to have patience with people and have the patience to work through the problems. If we aren't forced into that experience, then we'll never really understand the diverse needs of our community and our society.
But the debate over Islam and the internet needs to be viewed through the context of history. Dr. John Esposito, the founder of the Center for Christian-Muslim Understanding at Georgetown University, says Islam, like other religions, is going through a revolution of sorts, and that stepping back can give us the perspective we need to understand the process.
We forget that, for example, where Christianity and Judaism are today is the product of centuries of not only intellectual revolution, but there was a physical revolution. And even the Reformation itself wasn't just intellectual, it was bloodletting.
Esposito says Islam's evolution will take place in this era of globalization and instant communication, bringing us back to the internet as a two-edged sword. While the web will help bring a quicker resolution to many of the issues facing Islam, including who speaks for it, the process is also likely to take place under unprecedented pressure. Duncan Moon, NPR News, Washington.